Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose. Rose Colombo right here for you at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Wake up, America, and wake up around the world. Is the American dream on the verge of the American nightmare? Well, hello, people around there, out there in the big lockdown world created by an unseen enemy of humanity. Is it crimes against humanity? Maybe we'll find out sooner than later. You know, you're in the right place at the right time, because today on Colombo Chronicles, we will enter very soon into the world of authors and experts. And I'm excited because today we have a fabulous returning guest, and she has a brand new fictional book hot off the press. Her name, as you will probably remember, is Serita Williams. Beautiful name, S-E-R-I-T-A. It's unusual and beautiful. Serita Williams. She will share her latest dynamic story entitled Logan's Land, and I can't wait to hear about her latest creative work and her newest book. Quickly, there is some good news in the USA about a judge who upheld the U.S. Constitution. And I would like to briefly tell you about that before we enter into the world of authors and experts in just a few minutes. And the reason I want to tell you about it is because I get excited as an advocate for justice for many years, helping victims across this nation who were going through injustices and corrupt family law courts, having their children taken away even though they were non-offending parents, and sometimes never to be seen again, adopted out, or placed in foster care and forgotten and unable to access. Very, very sad for thousands of parents who have experienced that injustice. So anyway, I'm excited about this article because a United States judge upheld the United States Constitution. And I think that's very important because it's about the lockdown. And some of these Democrat governors have taken this additional increased power to a new level of totalitarianism. Power and control. Give somebody a little bit of power or control and they go crazy. So this is about the lockdown, and what happens in the United States of America affects the rest of the world's freedoms. And then afterwards, we will enter into the fabulous world of authors and experts. So let's see if I can find that particular article right here, hopefully. Yes. And this is from Western Journal, the Western Journal. And it says, shredded the Constitution. Illinois judge smacks down Democrat governor's attempt to extend the stay-at-home order. I think everybody's tired of staying at home, watching their savings dwindle if they had a savings. And many, many people live paycheck to paycheck in the USA and on credit cards. And so when something unexpected, like an unseen foreign enemy unleashed on America and the world happens, they begin to become depressed and frustrated and anxious and worrisome. And they have to worry about how are they going to pay their rent and how are they going to pay their bills and how are they going to feed their children and how are they going to get back to work if the businesses, and many will be, are permanently shut down or file for bankruptcy. And that tsunami is coming. That tsunami of bankruptcies is coming. And we're watching our food chain being broken down because of this unseen. And we're supposed to sit around indefinitely and wait until they pull the rabbit out of the hat for their new discovery. But Dr. Fauci researched the HIV/AIDS since 1984, and we're into 2020, and never came up with a cure or with a vaccine that cured HIV/AIDS. So are we just supposed to sit around for another 20, 30 years waiting for a untested, fast-tracked, chemical-laden with aborted fetal tissue and who knows what else, hopefully not made and developed in China? Are we supposed to sit around and wait for that vaccination to happen when he never, and he failed at developing a vaccine to cure AIDS since 1984? So, well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. But in this particular article on the Western Journal, it says that in the news that shocked absolutely no one, a state judge ruled Monday that Democratic Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said his stay-at-home order was illegal. According to Newsweek, a county judge in the land of Lincoln also said the 30-day extension of the order through May 30th shredded the Constitution. Thank God we have some constitutionalists still on the bench. The restraining order granted by Clay County Circuit Court Judge Michael McHaney only applies to a single citizen. Republican State Representative Darren Bailey, the plaintiff who had requested the court to issue the restraining order, Newsweek reported. Bailey argued that while state law allows the governor to declare a disaster for 30 days, which is reasonable, the law doesn't explicitly say whether a governor can extend such a declaration or issue a concurrent one when the original is set to expire. Pritzker said that precedent allowed for him to do this. McHaney disagreed, siding with Bailey in the lawsuit. Illinois residents can now join Bailey in his lawsuit or file their own. Are you seriously trying to argue that this executive order has not caused serious injury? McHaney told government lawyers during Monday's hearing after they asked whether Bailey had truly been harmed, according to WCIA's Mark Maxwell. In addition to saying Pritzker's extension of the order shredded the Constitution, McHaney reportedly added, every second this executive order is in existence, it violates the Constitution and shreds the Bill of Rights. Pritzker, meanwhile, is looking to obtain an emergency stay of the temporary restraining order while he asks the Illinois Appellate Court to take a look at the case. Going on is actually that our governor, J.B. Pritzker, is threatening the very constitutionality of the land that we live in by taking actions on himself, Bailey said, according to the Washington Post. And there you have it. Thank you for judges who uphold the United States Constitution. It's very, very important, extremely important to our freedom, liberty, rights, and due process of law. And also our lockdowns. So on that note, we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts with our very special guest, and she's a returning guest, fabulous returning guest, Sarita Williams, and she's going to tell us about her latest dynamic story entitled Logan's Land, right hot off the press, right after this important message, so stay with us.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Hi, yes, be sure to bring your appetite as soon as the Horseshoe reopens when the government says it's okay. But it is a fabulous restaurant, and it's right in the middle of traveling to Tucson, to Phoenix, to just about anywhere you want to go in those particular areas, and it's a landmark, exactly, a landmark restaurant. And first, I want to correct, I inadvertently said Williams. Our very special guest is Sarita Stevens, and she is an award-winning writer of books, scripts, adaptations. She teaches writing, works as a forensic nurse, helps other writers and directors with their medical, forensic poison, and investigative questions. Her forensic nurse series has been optioned, and it is part of several of her books. In fact, she has almost 40 books to her credit, among them The Ultimate Writer's Workbook for Books and Scripts, The Forensic Nurse, The Book of Poisons, and Bagels for Tea. She's a registered nurse. She taught at USC after being reared in Chicago. She worked as an investigative reporter at CBS in Chicago and helped expose a hospital in the Windy City that pretended to heal cancer patients. Very, very important work. She will fill you in on her latest book, and let's get started. The name of the book is Logan's Land by Sarita Stevens. So let's say hello to Sarita.
Hi there, Rose. Nice to hear you again.
It's good to talk to you too, Sarita. I don't know where that other name came from, but
anyway,
it was an unconscious thing there. So yeah. Sarita, you have such an extensive background. Would you like to explain a little bit about your background to our audience? Because you have, you know, written many, many books, and you're also a forensic nurse, which is unusual. And so it's you have all these dual roles. Can you explain a little bit about your background and your childhood and how you became to be a forensic nurse?
Okay. Well, back in the days when I was growing up, there was a book series, sort of Nancy Drew-ish, but it was a nurse, a Sherry Ames, and she was solving crimes in the hospital while she was taking care of patients. And that's what I wanted to do, I told myself, and that's why I became a nurse. Of course, when I got into nursing, it was nothing like that until I discovered in 1990, I discovered somebody had a handle sleuth RN on the line, and I began following up and found out about the new specialty, forensic nursing, how we help police and attorneys with their crimes and cases. And in fact, most nurses and doctors do not know how to testify in court properly and do not know how to collect evidence properly and preserve it for the court properly so it can be used. and we do sexual, we besides sexual assault, we do domestic violence. I do a lot of work with domestic violence victims, human trafficking, elder and child abuse, arson investigation, traffic investigation, workman's comp, psychiatric, people claiming that they're crazy and they didn't know what they were doing, as well as death investigation. And that's one of my books, The Forensic Nurse, Law Enforcement Secret Weapon. It talks about how we as nurses help police and attorneys with their cases. And hopefully it will be a series next year.
That would be fantastic.
Yes, I am looking forward to that.
Yes, because I don't think most people ever heard of a forensic nurse. And so it's intriguing and interesting, and it entails so much, and it helps so many people, not just the police, but the victims and the victims' parents and their family
Absolutely.
Members and so forth, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so
it's a great, great service that you're doing. And you also teach other nurses, correct?
Well, no, I teach writers. I teach writing for writers, but I've talked to other nurses, but no, I don't teach. I used to teach nursing a long time ago, but now I teach writers.
Oh, yeah. I thought maybe you helped other nurses become forensic nurses.
Well, I educate them about it, but
I
wouldn't say
I
teach. I'm not an expert in everything yet.
Well, you have an extensive background, that's for sure.
That's true.
And you wrote this this latest book after this must be your 41st book then?
Logan's like
Land. Yeah, Logan's Land. And so it's kind of different from what you've written before, and it's a fictional story. And so how did you come up with this idea to write Logan's Land?
Well, actually, I did a lot of historical romances and a suspense, romantic suspense, and things like that. And back in the 90s, I had heard about the robber barons who were grabbing up land from the homesteaders and killing them and taking their lands. And I'd been traveling through Montana. It's a beautiful, beautiful state. And I just decided, and that's where one of the situations were set. The Treasury Department, the FBI, was started there by Teddy Roosevelt as part of the Treasury Division, and expanded into the FBI because of the robber barons, because he started investigating these homesteaders being murdered. And it just seemed like a natural conflict that I can make use of. And, of course, I always look to see what's more unusual. And the story is set from a female protagonist, and she goes out to Montana, having escaped a situation in Chicago in the 1890s, and looking for her brother who has disappeared, and she doesn't realize that he was a secret Treasury agent, and he was looking to see what was going on, and she thinks that the man that she's going to be working for is the one that killed her brother, and she's determined to prove it, and she ends up falling in love with him instead, and then she's got to decide what's more important. And so Logan's Land is a romantic suspense from a female viewpoint set in the West. Not many Western stories are set with a female viewpoint.
Exactly.
I like to be,
especially in that day and time, that particular time frame. Yeah. And so what does she look like, and how old is she, and who's the guy, and what does he look like?
She's in her mid-20s. Well, originally when I wrote the book, I envisioned sort of a Tom Selleck type character, the Logan Jane, sort of a Western manly guy riding horses, sort of quiet and keeping to himself. And he and his brother own this huge land area in Montana. Ruby City is a made up city somewhere between Bozeman and Helena. And there's gold been found, and the brother is actually wanting to take the land over, and he's working with the sheriff and with some other people to destroy the homesteaders. And Logan finds out, and Logan's trying to do this undercover and helping her brother, but Elisa doesn't know that. All she knows is her brother is missing, and the last letter she has from her brother is, indicated to her that maybe Logan was involved. And she's coerced to go out to his ranch to teach his daughter. And she goes out there thinking she's going to discover things. And she discovers a lot of things, some of it she's not prepared to learn about. And she learns about the robber barons then, and about what's life really like in the West.
Wow, that's exciting. I like the theme, and I like the plot and everything. It's and so now we have to read it to find out what actually happens between suspecting him of murder and falling in love with him and all the twists and turns in between. I like that. And
absolutely.
So, yeah. And so, what was your favorite part of the book? Would you say?
Oh, I think my favorite part of the book is when she goes on the cattle, when she disguises herself and goes on the cattle drive, trying to find out what's going on in the land and trying to spy on him. And then she ends up having to escape the bad guy when he tries to trap her in the mine. And she does a lot of things. She's not a helpless female. She takes control of the situation, and she does things on her own, which, of course, many women at that time didn't do, or they
right.
did, but they had to do it secretly, because at that time we still didn't have the vote, and we still don't have equal rights, as a matter of fact.
We're still fighting.
We're still fighting that, yeah.
We're talking to Sarita Stevens, and that's S-T-E-V-E-N-S, Sarita Stevens, and she is an award-winning writer, and she has an extensive background in publishing and book writing and film and so forth. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your awards? You have an extensive amount of awards, too, and credits.
Yes, many of my scripts have won awards, and as my book. So one of my books, Unholy Alliance, is a young adult mystery series that was best book for the reluctant reader. I've been a semifinalist in Table Reads and Page Awards, Nickelodeon, and many other things. And thing is, what I teach my writing students is that the character is the most important, that your plot comes from who the character is. And that you have to develop it that way and not make the character fit into the plot. And that the most important thing is the emotion of who the character is and the universal theme of what you're trying to say in your story. And most new writers don't realize that. And they just want to do a plot, a beat by beat plot. And they think the more car chases they have and the more crashes they have, the more exciting it is. And the fact is, it's not true. The more emotion that they put in the story and the more universal thing their story is the more exciting to the reader. I try to educate people with something while I'm entertaining them. And that's basically my motto.
Yes, and I think it's interesting because did one of the characters have an autistic daughter?
Yes. Logan's daughter is autistic, and that's why that's the excuse he gives for bringing Alyssa out to the ranch to teach her. And basically, she's not really technically autistic. She basically stopped speaking when she saw her mother being killed by someone, and she vowed not to speak until the killer was brought to justice. And so that's part of the plot too. As to who killed the wife, the first wife.
And you have an Indian chief in your book as well. How does he play a part in it?
Well, because Indians were very important at that time, and they also were discriminated against, much like the blacks were. And they also still had to fight for their rights in the freedom, even though we took the land from them originally. And they really deserve to have equal rights as well. And so I gave them a diversity role in the story and helping to solve the crime at the end.
Okay. And so you're from Chicago, right?
I am from Chicago, the Windy City.
All right. And so you know, in your book, it says, you know, I read that it's Ruby City is a lawless place where death means nothing and money and land rules and so forth. How does that differ from parts of Chicago today?
Well, that's true. Parts of Chicago are like that, too. That's what you call a universal theme, Rose, because if you look at Maslow's hierarchy, power and money and sexual satisfaction, these are all up in Maslow's hierarchy that people universally, no matter if they're wearing high collars from Elizabethan era or they're wearing cowboy boots, they all strive for this Maslow's hierarchy, for the things that they feel that they need for survival. And again, love and respect and money and power and sex, these are all things that they look for. And so if we look for the emotion in the characters, and we develop what their emotional relationship is to the other characters, then the reader identifies with them and wants to learn more about them and learns to look at the lesson that they're trying to teach as well without even realizing it. And that's the best way to teach people things, is to write a fictional story with the lesson in there.
I think that's great because, you know, when you get emotionally involved with your characters, you want to keep picking up the book whenever you have time to keep reading and find out what happened next. And it's like a TV series, you know, you watch it and then you get so involved with the people that you have to keep watching, you know, until it's done. And then when it's over, you're like, is that it? I want to watch more. What happened to them after that?
That's what a good TV series does. You get involved with the characters, like with Breaking Bad, you know, and you understand where they're coming from, because most characters are not all good or all bad. They all have some flaws about them. Like even though he had cancer and you felt sorry for him, he was doing some bad things, but he was doing it because he wanted to save his family. And then he was doing it because to save his own pride.
Right.
So
we're talking We're talking to Sarita Stevens, and she wrote a really great book, Logan's Land, hot off the press, and she's telling us a little bit about her background and about her many awards she's won in over the years. And, you know, you also you have TV pilots that include Golden Murders, Gangsta, Yo Nun,
yes.
Alex with AZ. How did it feel to have a TV pilot?
Alex with Z is based on that I adopted my daughter as a single mom from Romania. And so I figured that she decided she was going to educate me in certain ways in the world and raise me. So that's Alex with the Z. But I just like showing people what's different things in the world. With Gangsta, I was working with Law Technology magazine, and one of the cops in South Central asked me to write something about what gang life was really like. And because I'd been working with the gang kids as well in a group called In and Out, because we go into the prisons and help them write their emotions out and help them express their emotions in writing. And
wow.
I just found that, I mean, many of their stories is so similar to that of the cops, but it's the choices everybody makes that changes your life around. And basically, Gangster is about the choices we make in life between the cops and the gang kids, and how they want to get out and they can't, or how they have to see themselves as being locked into where they are, and how the cops also feel locked into where they are in some respects.
Wow, that's a really good topic. I mean, because you look at these kids and you just think, God, if we could only help them, you know, they're just kids, you know. What happened to them? Broken homes, you know, living in poverty, whatever. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, and you feel for them. I mean, you can't help but feel for them getting into trouble at such a young age, you know, and knowing that it had to do with the environment, right?
A lot of it has to do with the poverty and the environment. And, you know, their mom has to work like 2 and 3 jobs to make a living, and so that nobody wants to take care of them. So they gravitate to the gangs, who is their quote-unquote family, and they don't realize that some of the stuff they're doing is really wrong because they see it as helping with their friends and being
right.
part of the gang community.
They want to belong. And they want to feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want to belong.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And
so did that ever get made into a film?
No, that has not been made yet, but I pitched it several times and several places are interested in it. It's won several awards. So we'll see what happens. You never know.
Yeah.
Of course, without with the money, things have stopped producing for a while. But, you know, you have to have, in this business, you have to be persistent and you have to have faith. I've had things, one of my stories against her will about my work in a psychiatric hospital with teenagers, it took me almost 15 years to sell because sometimes it's just not the right time. You have to be persistent. You have to have faith. You have to keep writing. You have to learn what's going on in the story and what can I do to make the story better. And you have to be willing to rewrite all the time. And a lot of new writers are not willing to rewrite. They think that their work is gold and they won't change a word and they're never going to get anywhere. You have to adapt to what's going on and do your homework. Who's buying what right now and what are people looking for?
Yeah, I said I call that PIN, persistence, insistence, and consistence. And
absolutely.
And, yeah, and people who give up, you know, I mean, it's going to sit on the shelf, period. It's
That's
not going
right.
to go anywhere.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you can't give up
you
if you have if you have a love
you
for writing like you do.
You have to keep on turning things out new, doing new things. And then every once in a while you look and see, well, can I revise this? Can I fix that? And sometimes it's the right time, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes you have to keep waiting.
How long did it take you to write 40 books?
Oh, I don't know. well, my first book was published in 81. But I'd written like 7 books before then. And, you know, they weren't, I had to learn writing as I was, each time I wrote, I improved. And it wasn't until my 8th book was published that I was able later to go back at some of this earlier 7 and say, oh my God, did I write like that? Oh, passive writing. Oh, too many is's and ands and too many L-Y words and too much flowery language. And I didn't really get to grab the emotion in my earlier stuff. And I had to learn to revise and to improve my material in my writing. I was able later to go back and rewrite 4 of the 7 and get those published. But you have to be willing to constantly learn.
Well, that's important information because I don't think, you know, most people think about that you have to keep rewriting your story, you know, and improving your story because there must be a reason that, you know, it's not moving, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And also, especially in Hollywood, it's a networking game, a relationship game. And you need to, even though I do have representation, I like to meet as many execs as possible. So I belong to various groups like Roadmap Writers and Stage 32, and I get to meet various executives and learn what they want and improve my material based on their notes and things like that. And you also have to know who to take notes from as well and not take notes from other writers who really don't know your story, but from people going to actually help you and improve your material.
Wow. So it's really, you know, like a job. I mean, no matter where you're at, you have to be able to keep your pen and pencil, your pad and pencil ready to take notes from, you know, from people who have information that you may forget down the future, but may be important to you during your time that you are writing and you can look it up, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I take notes all the time on everything. And even going to a movie is an education. Or watching a movie on TV, I look and say, oh, well, they did this scene this way and expressed the emotion this way. Maybe I can use something similar in my story. And you have to learn to see how can you use things and make it your own.
And what's interesting, too, about what you're saying, we're talking to Sarita Stevens, the author of Logan's Land, and 40 other books as well, wonderful books. And I think what's interesting, too, is that there's little, like, words, a little sentence, a little, you know, few words, and a remark that somebody makes that actually you never forget the picture because of that, those words. that stuck out in your mind.
Well, that's the idea. You have to be painting a picture with your words.
Yeah. And because Bridget Jones' Diary. I still remember the words where she said, we like you just the way you are.
Right.
And I don't think anybody could forget that. Because I think
that's
it's important
true.
That, because I think that hits home with people. It's like, oh, that's nice. They like her just the way she is, because so many people judge people. And it's nice when somebody likes somebody just the way they are. And
right.
that always stuck out in my mind, you know. And so I always remember Bridget Jones' Diary, you know. And so
mm-hmm.
I think the words like that are, yeah, the words like that are really important to remember a movie. And you don't even forget the title.
Right.
And so in your book, what did you find to be like a fun part to write? Because I think fiction is fun to write, and for a lot of people. And I mean, once they really get into it, what do you find is the fun part about it?
Oh, I find fun is developing the characters and their emotions and realizing how similar some things are to my own life. But they're not the same thing, but how I can relate to things that my characters are going through. And even though I haven't experienced everything that my characters experience, because of the universal theme and the emotions involved, I can validate what they're doing, and I can understand, and I can help readers to understand or viewers to understand what they're going through. And that's the idea, to get people to become engaged in the story with what the characters want and need, and how far they're willing to go to get something, and what the antagonist is willing to do. You know, antagonist, the villain, is not always a bad guy, per se. He thinks he's doing the right thing. He thinks he knows what he's doing, and he has every right to do what he's doing. So you have to look at things sometimes from the antagonist viewpoint, too. And that's one nice thing about writing books and scripts. I mean, with a book, you can even go into the antagonist's viewpoint and have whole chapters from his viewpoint and talk about his motivation, so that the reader doesn't think, oh, well, my hero is so wonderful and always great and stuff like that, because everybody has their own flaws, and we have to make our characters real and not all goody-goody.
Right.
And so
I've heard that some people say who have written books and then had it made into a movie, that the movie didn't really resemble the book. How does that happen?
Oh, that happens very often. First of all, books are usually a lot longer, obviously, than the script. In scripts, it's less is more. Scripts are a blueprint for the actors and the set designers and the director to create your story on screen, and they're more visual, and they're also more immediate. A book can be written over many, many generations. I mean, not your generation. I mean, in the story, the generations of the character, and
right.
and more locations. You can have chases and things like that. In a script, you have to look at the what is the budget? What are the expense? You know, the more characters you have in a script, the more it's going to cost. If you have animals and children in a script, it's going to cost more. The more locations you have, the more events like car chases and crowds, the more it's going to cost. So if you're a new writer, you want to start writing a low budget script first and get that sold first to get your reputation out there. Because no one wants to take a chance on spending $2 billion on your movie, A Space Odyssey, when they don't know if it's going to sell or not. So you want to start with something that's not going to be that expensive to make. And you want to develop your story. Sometimes you have to cut back on characters. Sometimes there'll be two or three characters in the book that you can actually combine into one character in the book. Or you might have to cut out certain scenes. Sometimes it's redundant in the book. You have chapters in the book that might not apply to what the goal is and the of the character. It might go off into a subplot or a tangent, that in the book you can delve into more, but in a script you have to be more careful because you're limited to about 100 pages. A good script these days is about 100 pages, 110.
Right.
They don't want it to be any more because it's more expensive to shoot those longer scripts.
Right. So funding is a big problem, too, for a lot of people seeking to have their – they might have a great book, but then the funding comes into it as well. So, like you said, you have to have all your ducks in order, basically, and know exactly what you're doing and network, right?
Right, exactly. And historicals are much more expensive to do, too, because you've got to think of the costume and location has to be written and revised. You have to get old cars from that time period or even, you know, and redo buildings and signs and whatever. You have to make things exactly like it was then for the reader and the viewer to really immerse themselves in that time period. And they can't do that if it's not accurate. And that costs money to redo.
How many pages is Logan's Land?
I have to look and see. I think it's like 230. I'm not positive. Let me look at the book here. The book is 254 pages.
And is that like... Is there like a number of pages that publishers prefer today?
About 190 to like 300, I think, is a good length.
Okay. You are a wealth of information.
I do my best to help with this. That's one of my goals.
Yeah. And so is Paparazzi Productions, Inc., your company?
That's my company, yes.
That's a cute name. It has a little puppy by it.
Right, that's
Paparazzi.
Because my dog is anonymous. You know, Paparazzi, Paparazzi.
Yeah, that's a cute twist, Paparazzi. I like that. So,
yeah.
if what is your favorite book that you've ever written?
Oh, well, every book I write is my favorite book. because every time I'm involved in it, you have to really immerse yourself in the time period. But I think one of my favorites is probably my book about Deborah the Prophetess, Judges 4 and 5, Lightning and Fire, because it's about a strong woman who takes control of things and ends up, and it's also biblical too, teaches us that we have to have persistence, have to have faith. You know,
right.
But I like my books. I have a grandmother mystery series from St. Martin's Press, Red Sea, Dead Sea. I have a young adult mystery series and Holy Alliance. I have the Book of Poisons. If anybody decides to poison their characters, I wrote it to help others get their poisons correct. And I put in enough there so the writers can get accurate symptoms and accurate diagnoses, but not enough for people to actually use. And if they have to do a lot of research, but I shouldn't want to use it on somebody. I have been using it as a consultant in a number of different shows and stuff like that.
Well, that's fantastic. And, the fact that you have spent your life helping people, basically, I think is a really great achievement because and then exposing it in books and pilots and hopefully in movie series too, because everybody loves those, either a documentary or a story where they can see people who are in need of help actually getting the attention and getting help as well. And I think that human interest is very, very important today. And I can see that you're accomplishing that and you've accomplished that and are accomplishing it. And so I want to commend you for all of that. And so You're welcome. And Sarita Stevens, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the interview, but it is your time to shine. You can give any message you want and any information you want about your books and how to get your books and any websites.
Okay. Well, my website is www.saritastevens.com, S-E-R-I-T-A-S-T-E-V-E-N-S. You can also look me up on Amazon. My IMBD is Sarita D. Stevens. And I have books in almost every genre except for guts and gore horror. And I'm always happy to help other writers with their medical, forensic, and poison questions as much as I can. And hopefully they will be seeing the Forensic Nurse series next year on the air, as well as other things.
Well, well, we will look forward to that. And Sarita Stevens, stay safe and during this time, and God bless you. And thank you so much for sharing your information with Colombo Chronicles Live.
Thank you, Lois. Take care. Be safe.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sarita Stevens has left the building. Her latest book, hot off the press, is Logan's Land, and it's a book about an independent and powerful woman at a time when women weren't really supposed to be independent and in control of their own lives, but there were women like that, and that's why it's important to write about them, even if it's a fictional, because there are real women like that, and they don't take no for an answer, and they go for whatever they're trying to achieve. And sometimes it ends up in falling in love with a man that you suspect of murder. So be sure to go to Amazon.com and check out Sarita Stevens, S-E-R-I-T-A-S-T-E-V-E-N-S, award-winning writer of books, scripts, and adaptations, and her latest book, Logan's Land. And on that note, we're going to enter into the world of politics, and we will be back in just a moment, so don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live, because now we're going to enter into the world of politics. And I thought I would share with you a book I got from Dr. Ben Carson. And it says, In God We Trust, and as Christians, the Bible calls for us to be salt and light to influence our culture. And he asked that I sign this because it's going to the president. And it says, Dear President Trump, as president, you have sworn a duty to not only uphold and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic, but also to preserve and protect the rights of the men and women serving in the military. Rights that President Obama violated over the past 8 years by threatening to court-martial, punish, and discharge Christian soldiers who shared their faith. This particular thing hit home because we have freedom of religion. And it appears that the Jews are being discriminated against in New York, and the Christians have always been discriminated against around the world. And, of course, the Muslims believe they're discriminated against, and we could go on and on and on. So freedom of religion is very, very important. And as a president and a friend to all our military, I call on you to repeal each and every executive order that he created to persecute Christian soldiers and remove the anti-Christian zealots he appointed that are still in power. I know you believe that America's Christian soldiers should be protected with the same intensity that they protect us. Our soldiers deserve better, and you can make that happen. Thank you. And it includes Obama's war on Christian soldiers continues today. President Obama officially began his all-out war on Christian soldiers and their religious liberty in 2013 when his anti-Christian allies in the Pentagon announced, "Religious proselytization is not permitted within the Dodd Department of Defense. Court martials will be decided on a case-by-case basis." That's so serious. I don't think most Americans realized this was happening during those 8 years that Obama was in office, that the Christians weren't just being discriminated against around the world, but by our own Pentagon, the Department of Defense. This is nothing more than an unconstitutional attempt to punish and silence Christian soldiers and chaplains once and for all. And as you noticed during the lockdown, they locked out Christians from Christian churches, and even if they sat 6 feet apart. And the police went through the parking lots, and the police took down the license plates, and they fined Americans, good Americans, with good intent, who believe that church is an essential business for them, and the pastors, and the priests, and the rabbis, and so forth. And they fined them $500 during a time they are unemployed, they cannot open their businesses, their finances are being drained, their businesses could be shut down permanently, they may not have even been able to get unemployment yet, they may have not been able to receive their $1,200 check that doesn't even pay the rent in state of New York or California and other high-end states. So why would the police give $500 tickets to Americans who need that money to pay their rent and feed their children and pay their wages? And they swore to uphold the United States Constitution. Shame on them. Court-martialing Christians. And I read about this firsthand while Obama was in office, and Americans did not rise up. Under Obama's unconstitutional policies, Christian soldiers and chaplains risk court-martial, prosecution, or even discharge if they talk about Jesus, quote the Bible, share their faith. This is so un-American. So discriminatory, so evil. Even worse, if an atheist, homosexual, or non-Christian is offended in any way, Christian soldier can and will be punished. So they can offend us and say whatever they want, but we can't offend them. And that law needs to be repealed. It's called the Hate Crimes Bill, and it only protects Muslims and gays. That's it. So, in other words, if they accuse a Christian or anyone else of offending them and call the police have the authority to arrest them. That is total discrimination. It's a discriminatory bill. It only protects two groups of people. But they can also say whatever they want to say or do whatever they want to do and not have the same done to them. On American soil, on our homeland. You know, the word hate is a really hateful word because it takes a lot. I can't even imagine hating anyone because it's so negative. It doesn't really have a meaning. I mean, how do you describe someone who goes out and intentionally murders someone? Is that a hate crime? I would think that's hate, you know? And so why do we have to have a hate crimes bill to protect certain people who could go out and kill a Christian and you have to remain silent? It makes no sense. These policies are still enforced today, along with the men who enforce them. Chaplains and same-sex marriage. But silencing and threatening Christian soldiers and chaplains is not good enough for President Obama. His policies force them to accept homosexuality by demanding they facilitate same-sex marriage ceremonies that are in opposition to the beliefs of the Christians and the chaplains. But if the chaplain refuses under Obama's reign, he faces court-martial and has his reputation forever tarnished, just like soldiers in the following cases. Now, this is another discriminatory law because he's not discriminating against polygamists or bigamists or same-sex. He's only discriminating against heterosexuals, Americans who believe in traditional marriage. This is discriminatory, and we're talking about our not just civilians. They're talking about the military who lay their lives down for their country, risk their lives for our country, for our freedom. Well, their freedom is being taken away. They're turned into the bad guys. Senior Master Sergeant Philip Monk. In 2013, Senior Master Sergeant Philip Monk was punished and relieved of duty after 19 years of honorable service because his openly lesbian commanding officer objected to his views that traditional marriage was between a man and a woman. His commander, the openly lesbian Major Valenzuela, wanted the Christian sergeant severely punished for expressing his religious objections to homosexuality. T. Sergeant Lane Wilson reprimanded for Jesus. In the Utah Air National Guard, a 27-year veteran technical sergeant, Lane Wilson, received a letter of reprimand for simply voicing a moral objection to the desecration of the base chapel's Christian altar by a homosexual wedding ceremony. As punishment, the military reduced his 6-year reenlistment to 1 year. Navy Chaplain LCDR Wes Motter, a 19-year veteran chaplain, now faces termination of his award-winning career and was relieved of duty and reassigned because he dared to quote the Bible during private counseling. After the good chaplain was targeted by an openly homosexual sailor who asked him what the Bible teaches, the chaplain quoted the Bible and said sexual immorality is a sin. The sailor complained, and the chaplain's commander, Captain J.R. Foss, fired the chaplain, stating in writing that he failed to show tolerance and respect. He discriminated against students who were different backgrounds. Lance Corporal Manifa Sterling was a Marine stationed at Camp Lejeune. As a devout Christian, she posted a scripture, "No weapon formed against you shall prosper," Isaiah 54:17, on paper near her desk and on her workplace computer. She was persecuted by her supervisor, who tore it down and threw her scriptures in the trash. Rather than complaining, she simply reprinted the verses and put them back. The next morning, she found the verses in the trash again. Soon after, Ms. Sterling was court-martialed. At the trial, Sterling represented herself and invoked her First Amendment rights to religious expression, as well as religious freedom restoration, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, to defend her posting of the verses, especially since no one in the unit ever complained about the verse. Unfortunately, the judge ruled against her. She was convicted, given bad conduct charge, reduced from rank of E3 to E1. Under Obama's policies still in force, many chaplains have already faced ridicule and lost the ability to serve their country because they chose to stand true to their beliefs and obey God rather than man. Sadly, the Air Force is violating federal law and .I-1300.17, which clearly allows freedom of religious expressions by all members of the United States military. After some anti-Christian companies threatened Academy cadets who wrote positive, encouraging Bible verses on their personal whiteboards, they were pressured by their chain of command to erase the Bible. Air Force lawyers Air Force lawyers now claim freedom of religion only applies to dress code, not to freedom of speech or press. Stop these domestic enemies of the First Amendment from violating the freedom of Christian cadets. Because of that, President Obama's anti-Christian friends have publicly demonized Christian soldiers who dare talk about Jesus Christ as being guilty of treason, committing acts of spiritual rape, and even sexual assault, declaring them enemies of the Constitution. And they have more stories of so many of the military men and women who serve our country and have been discriminated against because of their Christian faith or reciting the Bible or posting a Bible verse. Some have even been stripped of their positions and even discharged from the military. So this is a very serious, serious situation for our military. They sacrifice for us. They fight for our freedom. They get injured. They leave their families, their loved ones behind to fight for our freedom. Evil can only succeed if good men do nothing. Sadly, the same evil men who tried to make an example out of me, says one officer, are far from defeated. They understand that religious freedom is precious and fragile. It can be taken away in a heartbeat if we don't stand guard. And that's exactly what will happen if President Trump does not repeal these policies and remove the anti-Christian zealots Obama appointed. That's why we need your help now. And so this is a project that's going on right now, and Dr. Ben Carson is leading the way. And we ask for your prayers for our soldiers to be protected and to be able to exercise their freedom of religion and to protect the Bible and the cross, Christian churches, Christian pastors, Jews, Mormons, whoever, doesn't matter. Everyone deserves to be protected by the U.S. Constitution and under and exercise their freedom of religion. And on that note, God bless you. God bless America. May God keep us free and safe and sovereign and uphold the U.S. Constitution as the laws of this land. And until we talk again next Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m., I want you to stay healthy, stay happy, and remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me, but together we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone when you listen to Columbo Chronicles Live.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.